Kink 101 is proud to present Deviant Discussions, where kinksters come together and put the Y in kink. With Diavol Diablo, Subtle Shadow, and Glass Girl, this is Deviant Discussions.
Tell us the story about your Zoom name again.
So last night I had a family Zoom. Well, what if like my family listens to this podcast and I had no idea, but I doubt it.
Your voice?
I don't know. Would they?
I would think so. It's not like they've never heard it
before.
Now
they'll know for sure. If they ever had a doubt, they're listening. I got on a Zoom with my family last night and saw that my mom was like, "Who's Shadow?" It's like, yeah, it's just a silly name that I came up with to play cards with my friends online.
Cards, that's brilliant.
Cards
specifically, yes. Yeah.
Like not just games, just cards. She thought
that hacked our Zoom because she was like, "I don't know who Shadow is. Is this a Zoom bomber?"
What is a Zoom bomber?
Oh, you haven't heard of that? Like the people who, at least in the States, it's a big deal. Is like if your Zoom is a public link and doesn't have a password, that random people can just show up in your Zoom conference and like bomb it with like a porn or some kind of hate speech or something like that.
I mean, I don't really
why someone
Zoom,
would
but...
attend my family's Zoom. I have no idea.
Oh, look at this. A family Zoom. I'm going to get on.
Well, my mom. So my brother lives in a specific city. And so she had the city's name and then a meeting. So it was like, you know, LA meeting.
Oh, okay.
And she thought it was someone from the city who like somehow found. She had this whole story like this. Some local person to the city thought it was a government meeting or something. A, no. B, why would someone named Shadow join a government?
That's hilarious. Yes. Well, you've given her a story to share for the next little while.
Yeah, I have. And now, yeah, exactly. She'll be sharing it with adult friends who are like, wait a minute.
I don't know if that's you out in yourself or out in them, or I mean, it could make for some interesting dinner conversation the next time you see anybody. And they're like, "So I heard a story about this Zoom call with someone called Shadow," and you just get redder and redder and redder. That would be brilliant.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm going to see my entire family this weekend, so that should be interesting.
I would love for one of them to just be sat there like so, you know, blasé and stuff and just be like, "So Shadow, how's the podcast going?" And you just launch into "Oh, it's great. Yeah, it's going really well," and blah, blah, blah. And like, they just be like, "Uh-huh. Yeah, I knew it." That would be good. I'd enjoy that. I don't know why. Uh-oh. It's cruel of me, but
that makes me, that just makes me cringe. You should see my face right now. I'm like, no.
Oh, gosh. It would really tickle me, though. Anyway, while we're on the topic, I wanted to talk about triggers today. So, like, what you can do if you find yourself triggered, what you can do if you find yourself in a situation where you've inadvertently triggered somebody else, and how you deal with those kinds of things. I only have, like, one or two stories maybe about times that I've encountered triggering, but I'm sure, Glass, you have more than one. And Shadow, you might have a couple as well. So I figured we could just have a chat about that and kind of open the door on triggering.
Sure. I'll have to think on it for a minute. I don't know if one of you guys wants to go first.
I can go first. So I have a diagnosis of complex PTSD. So I kind of go into life every day, you know, dealing with that illness. And I'm pretty aware of what triggers, I have, you know, wide open, like spaces with too many people, loud sounds, like that kind of thing. But also there's quite a lot in the terms of, like sexual activity that I can be triggered by. So before I play with anyone, I go through that with them and let them know what my triggers are and then what to do if I am triggered and what happens to me, what that looks like, as well as if they can help or what helps me like kind of pull out of that kind of state.
And so when you tell people about your triggers, do you ever encounter that like sometimes it puts them off or they kind of, I don't want to say shame you for them, but they sort of, you see the judgment in their eyes because there is this thing that triggers you and it might be, you know, something that's understandable or it might be something that's a little bit out there. Have you ever encountered someone that's been kind of weird about it?
For the most part, people are understanding because the reason why I have those triggers to begin with is because I've been through trauma, right? So most people are compassionate. I do like to be fairly upfront with it. So if it is a reason, if they don't want to play as a result of them or as a result of the fact that I have PTSD, then that I can totally understand that. And that's why I talk about it up front. Because not everybody wants to play that way or be restricted by certain things. I did have a trigger for a long time about the word whore. I could say it, I could read it, but I couldn't have it said to me in kind of like a sexual context or like, you know, while having sex or while having a scene. And I actually worked through that one with my ex-partner where we did kind of like an exposure, like the best way to put it would be like an exposure therapy, because it was something that he wanted to use. Mm-hmm. And that is no longer a trigger for me because of that. But that was a fairly minor one compared to my other ones. So yes, I don't know that I've ever felt judged for it. I think I've judged myself harder than anybody else judges me. And I feel ashamed of it because it makes me feel like, I'm not as fun to play with, or I'm not as good as submissive because I have some restrictions.
I think that's quite common. I think that people, when they get to the point of negotiating and discussing scenes and things like that, I think they do often overlook their triggers because they don't want to feel either ashamed of themselves or as if they're putting restrictions on play. And it's a shame that people think that way about themselves. You know, a trigger is a trigger because of, as you say, trauma that you've been through and things like that, that you shouldn't feel ashamed of putting that boundary in place, because we put boundaries in place in day-to-day life all the time and we don't feel ashamed of ourselves for them. You know, if you don't have sugar in your tea, for example, you say, oh, no sugar for me, thanks. You don't think to yourself, I'm putting a restriction on this person by telling them how I want them to make this cup of tea. And I don't understand why we do that to ourselves in a kink and BDSM context so much.
Yeah.
Well, one thing that helps me kind of push through that shame and talk about it anyways, is because I see it as not only protecting myself, but also protecting my partner. Like the last thing I would want would be for my partner to encounter something unexpected or a trigger or not know what to do and have that feeling of like, you know, thinking that they did something wrong, thinking that it's their fault, not knowing how to support me in that and how scary and helpless, you know, that person might feel. And I don't want that for them. So it's important to me to, as a submissive bottom, you know, to communicate, again, not only for myself, but especially for my top and dominant, if that, and that helps me push through the shame.
And what about you, Shadow?
I really can't, honestly, I don't think I've been especially triggered in any scene that I can think of. I did have a very strong reaction to a word, and it's interesting how just even a single word, but for me, similar to Glass with Whore, it was easy. I was playing with one of my current partners for the very first time, and we had negotiated and everything, and I said, oh yeah, you know, I love degradation, like just go for it, you know, like any kind of verbal abuse you want to throw my way is totally fine. And he was like, he said something like, you're just so easy. And I felt like this deep rage kind of come up. And he said that like the expression on my face just turned to like sheer anger. And he kind of paused for a minute. And he's like, are you okay? I was like, yes.
But you weren't.
Yeah. But like, I just could not. And so, yeah, I think, and you're right, I wasn't. And afterwards we talk through it, and yeah, like he still slips it, like, so I decided after recognizing it and kind of thinking about it, I wanted to try it again to see if I would have the same reaction, kind of knowing that it had some kind of charge behind it. And somehow, I guess, like the claiming of it as something that could potentially cause a reaction. Like for me, one of my favorite things about being a submissive is how it challenges me to have self-control. Mm. And so I was like, yeah, do it again. And so I think it was kind of like over with an exposure, it kind of moved from being a potentially triggering word to being one that was, this is going to sound weird, but was actually still kind of humiliating, but right. I want it to be, I guess. Yeah. So like it became a word I could own just as much as whore or slut or any of those other terms, but this one especially, and he'll drop it when we're like deep in to play, can just like make me writhe with like humiliation that makes me so turned on.
You know, sometimes I listen to the things that we say, and I just sit there and I'm like, God, we're messed up in all the right ways.
You know, like he just, you know, all it takes is just, yeah, I'm not going to get graphic, but you know, like we never get graphic on this podcast, but you know, my level of arousal would be like, oh, you're just so easy. It's like, God damn it. Oh, I, is that hot? And I'm so mad at the same time. But yeah, so it's kind of become I think for me, it was once I'm able to put a name and kind of separate myself from that emotion, almost like a mindfulness practice, I guess, it helps me to overcome and possibly, you know, if I ever come across any triggers, I do know that there's one thing that I'll never do. Well, I can't say never. Was that 6 months from never, Dee Dee?
Yeah, it was.
But something I suspect I will always be afraid to do is any kind of cloth gag, just from childhood experiences. And I think that might potentially be like, I mean, it's a hard limit. So I don't know. Maybe one day I'll explore that, but I seriously doubt it. So, yeah.
Interesting. It's curious that you both mentioned how like a sort of exposure therapy has helped you kind of come to terms with these triggers and overcome them and take mm-hmm. ownership of them. And I wonder sometimes you encounter people that say that they like to push limits and things like that. And I wonder if they're mm-hmm. in their mind, they think that it's some kind of exposure therapy and that if they push against a limit for long enough or if they push against a trigger for long enough, it's going to go away and it's going to open you up to like this whole new realm. And I think that it's worth stressing the importance of, you know, we have limits and triggers in place because they are a form of self-protection and you can't guarantee that mm-hmm. you're ever going to be able to break through that and overcome it. Right. You know, exposure therapy to something like you've both said that they were quite simple things, but if it was something that was a lot more complex or woven into like a traumatic scenario that you'd actually gone through, that it just replayed in your head, there's definitely going to be no guarantee that exposing yourself to something like that is going to be a valid way of overcoming it.
100%.
Well, I think, yeah, I think that there's a very big caveat to that, which is, at least in my case, and I'm guessing with Glass as well, that that pushing of that limit, that exposure of that, was something that we consented to mutually. And like, yeah. I expressed, yes, I want you to continue to do that. But if like a dominant, you start playing with a dominant who knows that you have these soft and hard limits, and without asking starts kind of pushing on those, that should be a sign that they may not be a safe partner, in my mind. Like, those are things that I think need to be like clearly communicated before you start kind of flirting with the lines of where those boundaries are.
Absolutely. And I think you need to have a good self-awareness as to what then, if you are triggered, is going to ground you, what's going to bring mm-hmm. you back to a place of peace or calm or safety. Mm-hmm. Like, certainly before, you know, we started challenging that word whore, he knew, you know, how to help me co-regulate, like, you know, emotionally regulate. Mm-hmm. I also, in case I go nonverbal, which does happen, I have a cue card that I keep with me that has a bunch of different things that can be done, like questions to ask me, how to engage me, some supplies that might, you know, like ice, for example, is, or something, even like a cold cloth, you know, something sensory, you know, helps and get you out of that fight or flight and bring you back into, you know, your parasympathetic nervous system engages instead, and that can help ground you. So it's really important to have those tools ahead of time. And not just when, for me, it's not just when I'm, you know, was playing with that particular trigger. I have those tools available every time I play. Because it just makes me feel safer, and then it makes me feel like my partner's safer.
For me, I only have one like major memory that I can remember where I was triggered, and it was kind of accidental. And it was kind of like, I brought it on myself as well. And, so I had an experience when I was younger with an ex-boyfriend of mine that was not a positive experience. And I thought that I was over it. I thought that I'd learned to overcome whatever negativity there was related to this situation and things. And I was with my, like, a new partner. This was years down the line. I mean, oh my God, it must have been like a decade or something. And I was just being playful and sassy and things like that. And I did this like little butt wiggle because I was, you know, being a brat, for want of a better word. And he said, if you wiggle your ass at me one more time, I'm going to throw you down and I'm going to fuck it. Which at the time I was like, okay. And so we had this moment where I was like looking at him and I did it and he threw me down and whatnot. And, I've had quite a few situations where people have threatened me with that, but by the by. So yeah, anyway, so he did, and he took me, I suppose it was some kind of consensual non-consent type thing. And mm-hmm. suddenly I was just reminded of this experience with my ex-boyfriend. And I wouldn't want to say that it was like a rush of emotions or anything like that, but it was kind of like a click, something unclicked. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, this is brilliant. I love it. It's so much fun. And then it was like an uncoupling of train cars. And suddenly one side carried on accelerating and the other side was just slowing down to a stop. And these two, like this divergence in my mind that it created, just that was what overwhelmed me. It wasn't the memory. It wasn't the flashbacks or anything like that. It was this mm-hmm. uncoupling of my mental connection to the moment, I guess. And I started crying and he stopped because, you know, it came out of nowhere. I was giggling and things like that. And then suddenly I was mm-hmm. just crying and he's like, what, are you okay? Did I hurt you? I'm so sorry. I shouldn't have done it. I took it too far and too hard and things like that. And I was like, no, it's not that. And he's like, what's wrong? And I can't remember, which is terrible of me, but I can't remember if I'd ever told him about this experience. I think I had in passing, but I hadn't really like gone into detail on it or anything like that. And so he was trying to find out what was wrong and if I was okay and things like that. And I was just really, really disconnected from myself for a while. I wasn't nonverbal, but I was very, my responses weren't to what he was asking as such. Yeah. I was responding, but not quite consciously. Yeah. It was really hard to explain.
Association. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like I just wanted to reconnect myself before I tried to bring anybody else into the loop on it. Mm-hmm. And so we just sat and we were like cuddling on the bed and things like that. And he's like, when you're ready to talk, just talk. And I just sat there processing for a while and he just held me. And eventually I managed to say, this is what it was. I think mm-hmm. this is why it happened, but I'm pretty confident it won't happen again because it was the first time I'd gone through anything like that. And mm-hmm. I've never gone through it again mm-hmm. since. So I wouldn't want to say that it was a trigger, but it was definitely a point in time where I was triggered.
Yes.
It was really strange. And I've never, ever experienced anything quite like it. The only way that I can describe my mental state was like two carriages on a train and one slowing down and the other one carrying on going. And the part of me that could see the one that was still going was sad because it was carrying on without me. And the one that was carrying on was looking back and thinking, oh shit, we've left one behind. It was really strange. Mm. Very strange indeed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like when I'm, you know, at the height of being triggered, which is honestly because I think I've been so proactive, it's not really happened a lot during play. Like me, I think maybe twice. Outside of play, even, you know, when I've been triggered in the day to day, I forget where I am. I forget how old I am. I forget, you know, what time, like where in kind of the timeline of my life, I am. It's like, I'm right back in that particular moment. I can smell the smells of that time. I can feel the sensations. It's like reliving it.
It's interesting. Go ahead. I'm sorry. No,
and you know, because it can be so intense, it's why it's so important to know how to, you know, regulate yourself again.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that is a big factor of it, isn't it? It's the intensity with which it can hit you. So as much as you might be having a really, really intense BDSM scene that's going really, really well, it's always worth keeping in the back of your mind that if you are suddenly triggered, it can be just as, if not more intense than what you were going through at the time, like in the scene. For example, if you were having your ass handed to you by a sadist or a top and you are triggered by something that they say, your emotional response could be more involved and more vehement than it was to actually being beaten or, you know, struck with a whip or whatever, anything like that. Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes, especially when we're new to the scene or we're new to doing play with different people or, you know, just starting to explore with a new partner, I think sometimes we forget. And it's funny because I remember talking to someone about it once and I compared it. I don't know why, because I haven't experienced it, but I compared it to childbirth and how you forget the pain of childbirth by the time you're having another baby. And then you're in that moment and you remember how bad it was and you think, oh shit, why have I done this to myself again? And that was the only way that I could compare kind of what it felt like, was you forget in the time that lapses between the event that is your trigger and having something trigger you again, you kind of forget to some degree. And then suddenly you're put right back into that situation again. Mm. And I wonder if that ties in a little bit to what you were saying, Glass, about how you're taken straight back to that moment and you can smell the smells and you can hear the sounds and feel the sensations and things like that.
Oh, absolutely. And that's just, I mean, that's part of like the PTSD, right? Like flashbacks, whether they actually be, you know, visual or auditory, there's even, you know, emotional flashbacks that you can be hit with where you're not necessarily sure where this emotion has come from, but like all of a sudden you feel this way. And there's nothing that's really causing you, like that you can think of that would make you have this emotion. Mm. It's kind of out of the blue. I mean, those can be emotional flashbacks as well, for sure.
So if you were talking to your young self again, when you were first entering the scene or first getting involved with a new partner, how would you recommend that someone starts to maybe think a little bit more deeply about the things that could trigger them? Because we place so much emphasis on negotiating limits and things like that. You know, you say, what do you want to get out of a scene and what don't you? But do you think that it's easier or more difficult to address what your triggers could be?
I think it's more difficult. I mean, it's one of the reasons why I don't do pickup play. Because I need a foundation of like familiarity and like deep trust, to be able to share the things I need to share, you know, in order for me to be able to play safely. Because again, like pickup play, I don't want, you know, to quickly negotiate something and then do something that is, you know, accidentally or, you know, obviously unintentionally, that's going to trigger me. And then, you know, that traumatizes them because they were, you know, my reaction, wasn't what they expected. So I'm pretty cautious around play. Like I prefer to do it and we'll only do it in, you know, with a well established relationship. But as far as like the negotiating part, it's really sitting with yourself and thinking about things that, that, you know, remind you of a certain time, excuse me. And, you know, being open and talking about them. And there might be things that happen that you don't expect during play, something that you didn't think would ever bother you. And it happens and it reminds you of something else. And, you know, I think that can happen even in vanilla sex, right? With the vanilla partner, something can happen that maybe reminds you of something, that happened to you in the past. So it's really important to communicate and just be aware of, you know, what you can and can't handle and how quickly you can bring yourself back.
Yeah, it's definitely worth, if you were sitting down and doing that list of things that might be potential triggers, to definitely start thinking about, I suppose it's kind of like a subset of aftercare. It's like a just in case care. Yep. And having
that toolkit.
And having that list of whether it's, you know, particular textures or things like that, because again, it's in the same way that aftercare is kind of reconnecting you to reality and bringing you back into a normal headspace, I guess. Once you've been triggered and you have to try and return to that normal headspace again, you're going to need probably quite similar tools in a lot of cases. You know, if you have a particular favorite stuffed toy or like a snack, if that's the kind of, like, you know, they say that sugar is good for shock and things like that, or, you know, a good stiff brandy or whatever, depending on your preference. And I think I sometimes definitely don't pay enough attention to those what if backup options of, just because I know that I don't necessarily need aftercare in a scene, I don't think about my just in case care.
I definitely should.
Another key component, I think, to all of this as well, is that I feel like every person on earth has experienced trauma in some form or fashion. And if you have those kind of memories that are sensitive to you, I think that sometimes people can confuse BDSM with alternative therapy, and it is in a lot of ways therapeutic, but I think it would be I would not recommend approaching a scene with the expectation that your partner is your psychiatrist or therapist, and or that you are approaching it as their therapist. Like, if they have deep-seated issues, BDSM can be a tool, but it's not gonna solve those.
I always
it can
say
help it, you cope, but yeah,
it's not, it can be healing, but it's not a replacement for therapy.
Yes. Sure. So yeah. I just kind of wanted to throw that out there that, you know, when I'm talking about like this exposure therapy, like I'm also, you know, doing things like meditation practices and exercise and like self-care, and the expectation if I do drop or if I am triggered is that by and large, I'll be able to kind of self-soothe and take care of myself. As much as, you know, I mean, I can rely on my partner for certain aspects, but you know, they can't be with me for the next like 74 hours or whatever, you know what I mean? Like you have to kind of negotiate that aftercare as well and kind of talk about what's going to happen if you are triggered, in terms of how, what you expect from them and what they're able to offer.
Absolutely. There's a piece that I wrote on kink and trauma that I think isn't up on our site yet, but will be. And then there's a list in there of like suggested like tools that you could use to help you.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, it'd be good to share the link for that when the podcast goes out. So is there anything else that you think would be helpful to people out there that find themselves in the situation where they've either triggered their partner or their partner has been triggered and they are attempting to pick up the pieces? Because I think we speak about this from the perspective of being the one triggered quite often, and sometimes being on the other side of it and watching it happen, it's like watching a car crash. You can't do anything about it. What advice would you give to the people in that situation?
Well, my hope would be that, you know, their partner, their submissive or bottom, would have had a conversation, so they're not completely taken off guard. I think it's important to remember that it's not your fault, and it's not your partner's fault either. This is just, it's just reality, right? I mean, we have things that happen to us that change us. And, you know, often if it's PTSD, actually physically change your brain. So your partner isn't, you know, overreacting or, you know, being difficult because they're triggered. They can't help it. And I think it's best, you know, hopefully you're submissive or your partner has talked to you about what might be helpful for them. But I think the biggest takeaway is that, you know, is just be present, sit with them in it, and be as supportive as you can, and know that it's not your fault.
Definitely. And I do have one last question. Do you think that it's possible for the left side of the slash to be triggered?
Absolutely.
Oh, yes. Without a doubt.
Yeah.
And do you think that they would find it more difficult to ask for, well, not necessarily ask for that help, but to receive that support in the same way that a submissive, you know, would welcome the support of their D-type? Do you think that D-types have this reputation for dealing with that by themselves?
Yes.
Yeah. These are easy questions.
They are, aren't they?
And it shouldn't be, right? I mean,
it really shouldn't be, but it is. Yeah, it can be hard as a top or a dom.
Absolutely, but it's also I'm hoping that they can consider it the same way. You know, push through the shame of it, because it's actually protecting your submissive if they know what to do.
Definitely. That's a really good piece of advice. Like, even if you don't want someone to help you through, you're protecting somebody else by letting them help you through it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great way to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for joining us this week. If you'd like to know more about kink and BDSM, or if you have your own adventure to share, please visit kink101.com. That's KYNK101.com, because we put the Y in K.